All right, get ready to dive into this case about Pacific Capital Bancorp, PCB. They were hit hard after the real estate market went south and Ford Financial Fund came in offering a $500 million lifeline. Seems like a pretty classic rescue, right? But that's where things get interesting.
It is pretty interesting how this lifeline could turn into a controlling stake for Ford Financial. So the deal involved issuing convertible preferred stock, which could then be converted into a huge, like, 2.275 billion common shares. That's over 20 times what PCB had initially authorized.
Wow, yeah, that's a big power shift. Some shareholders weren't too happy about this and decided to sue. What were their main arguments against the deal?
They were basically arguing that PCB was trying to pull a fast war, structuring the deal so Ford Financial would, like, inevitably end up in control. So their legal strategy focused on two sections of the California Corporations Code. The first one was Section 405A, which governs share issuance. They claimed PCB needed to amend its articles of incorporation to authorize those extra shares before the deal even went through.
So they were saying PCB was jumping the gun by not getting shareholder approval for that potential increase in shares right away.
Exactly. And their second argument, this one involves Section 1001, which focuses on asset sales. They tried to argue that issuing so much stock was basically the same as selling off a huge part of the company. It was like an asset sale disguised as a stock issuance. Pretty clever, but a bit of a stretch, I think.
Yeah, it does seem like they were trying to force a square peg in a round hole. But it does bring up a good question. Should there be stricter rules around how companies issue stock? Especially when it leads to such a big change in ownership.
Yeah, it's a debate that's still going on in corporate law. This case really shows the tension between giving companies flexibility to raise capital and protecting shareholder rights.
Okay, so we've got shareholders pushing back and pointing at the rules. What did the court have to say about all of this? Did they agree with the shareholders on Section 405A, the one about authorizing shares?
Actually, no. The court went with PCB on that one. They said that Section 405 doesn't require companies to amend their articles of incorporation as soon as option or conversion rights are granted. Basically, the company can amend its articles later when those preferred shares are actually converted.
So they were basically saying PCB can deal with that later.
Exactly. And on the second argument, trying to use Section 1001 on asset sales, the court wasn't convinced. They were clear that issuing stock is just fundamentally different than selling off tangible assets like buildings and equipment.
That makes sense, yeah. You can't really compare issuing shares with selling off physical parts of a company. So two strikes against those dissenting shareholders. But there was another part to their legal challenge, right? Something about a fiduciary out.
Oh, yeah. They argued that PCB's board breached its fiduciary duty by not including a fiduciary out in the deal with Ford Financial. Basically, that's a clause that lets the board back out if a better offer comes along later.
Oh, I see. So like an escape hatch for the company if a better opportunity shows up. Did the court agree that PCB's board messed up by not including that?
Not exactly. The court pointed out that California law doesn't require boards to include fiduciary outs in their deals. It's more of a judgment call, and in this case, they seem to prioritize the need for making sure the deal would go through for certain.
Interesting. So they were giving PCB's board a little leeway, recognizing they were in a tough spot and needed to get that investment secured quickly. But wouldn't that make investors nervous? If a company can just back out of a deal whenever, why would they invest?
Well, that's the balancing act that courts have to think about a lot. In this case, they seem to be saying that forcing boards to always include fiduciary outs might discourage investments, especially with companies that are struggling and need help.
So it's like they're trying to make things friendlier for investors, even if it means giving companies more power in how these deals are structured. But didn't that also cause some worries about the dissenting shareholders and what happens to their rights?
Yeah. For sure. The court's decision really started a discussion about whether this kind of flexibility could be abused, potentially allowing majority shareholders to lock in control down the road, even if it's at the cost of the minority shareholders.
Okay, so we've covered the main legal arguments and what the court decided. But before we move on, there's something I'm not totally clear on. You mentioned that the appeal was moot.
Oh, right, yeah. It's kind of a procedural thing. The shareholders who are against this whole thing, they originally tried to block the deal with Ford Financial. They wanted a preliminary injunction. But when the lower court said no and the deal went through, they appealed that decision. Problem is, by the time the appeal got to the court, the deal was already done.
So like closing the barn door after the horse is already gone.
Exactly. The deal had closed, so the appeal didn't really matter anymore. But here's the interesting part. Even though the appeal was moot, the court still chose to address the legal questions that the shareholders brought up.
Why would they do that? If it was already done, what was the point?
Well, it's about setting a precedent, you know, giving guidance for future cases. The court knew that the legal stuff in this case was important and would probably come up again. So they used this chance to make some things clearer about corporate law, basically setting a precedent for how similar cases should be handled later.
So even though those shareholders ended up losing, the case still ended up changing how we look at corporate law. It's interesting how specific legal battles can have such a big impact.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just one of the reasons why this case is so important for corporate law.
We've covered a lot, but there's more to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something about a shareholder vote back in 2009 that was part of all this.
Oh, yeah. That vote is really important if we want to understand how we got here. It's a great example of how a normal, routine decision can have unexpected consequences years later.
I'm definitely interested. Let's talk about that 2009 vote in part two of our deep dive.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the Pacific Capital Bancorp case. Let's pick up where we left off with that court decision on fiduciary outs.
Yeah, you mentioned that California law doesn't require boards to include them, and the court seemed to think that certainty about the deal was more important than having a potential escape hatch. But did they completely shut down the idea of fiduciary outs?
Not really, no. What's really interesting is that the court did acknowledge that fiduciary outs can be good in some situations. They really stressed that it's a case-by-case kind of thing. So boards should think carefully about the pros and cons, depending on the specific deal and the company's situation, of course.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all rule. It sounds like the court was basically telling boards to really think it through. Would a fiduciary out actually be good for the company and its shareholders, or could it end up scaring away potential investors?
Exactly. It's all about finding that balance, you know, attracting that investment, but also making sure shareholder interests are protected. And that's where the expertise and judgment of the board of directors really matter.
This case makes you realize just how complex those boardroom decisions can be, especially when a company is in crisis mode. It makes you wonder if the outcome might have been different if PCB wasn't in such a bad spot, like, you know, because of the 2008 financial crisis and all. Do you think the court was maybe a little more lenient because of the economy back then?
That's a good point. The court did seem to cut PCB some flack, given how unusual the circumstances were. But their decision also got people talking, right, about whether this kind of flexibility could be used unfairly in less serious situations.
Right, right. That whole lock-in thing we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
What if boards can structure deals so that a majority shareholder can just take control later on? Doesn't that, like, set a bad precedent?
Yeah, it's a legitimate concern. And it's another reason why this case is so important for corporate law. It forces us to consider the downsides, right? What if prioritizing deal certainty over other things ends up with majority shareholders using tactics that hurt minority investors? It's something to watch, for sure.
It's like a legal thriller.
Right.
Like all these twists and turns and unanswered questions. Speaking of twists, before we go too far, can we go back for a second? You mentioned that the appeal was moot. Can you explain that again?
Of course. Remember, the dissenting shareholders wanted to stop the deal with Ford Financial from the very beginning. They asked for a preliminary injunction, but the trial court said no, and the deal went ahead, so they appealed. But here's the thing. By the time the appeal actually got to the court, the transaction was already finished.
So it was too late to do anything? The deal was done, so the appeal didn't matter?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what usually happens in moot cases. But there's a twist here. Even though the appeal was moot, technically, the court decided to look at the legal issues that the shareholders had brought up.
Why would they do that? If the deal was already over, what was the point?
Well, think of it like this. They wanted to provide some guidance for future cases. You know, set a precedent. The court realized that the legal questions here were really important, and they'd likely come up again in other cases. So they saw this as a chance to give some guidance to lower courts and to the whole corporate world, really, even though the outcome of this particular case wasn't in doubt anymore.
So they used this case to clarify some of the important principles of corporate law. Even though the case was basically over, it still had a lasting impact.
Exactly. And it shows that courts don't just resolve disputes, they shape the legal landscape for years to come. It's not just about this one case, it's about the big picture.
We've talked a lot about how this could be bad for minority shareholders, but let's look at the other side. What are the good things about giving boards this flexibility in structuring deals?
It's a great question. And remember, attracting investment is crucial, especially for companies that are having problems. The court basically made the investment environment more friendly by giving boards more space to negotiate deals, you know, without being scared of legal challenges later.
Like, they were sending a message to investors saying, hey, your deals will be honored. California courts get it. You need to feel secure in these transactions. But what about the shareholders? Didn't we say that this decision could make it easier for majority shareholders to take control?
You're right. It comes down to finding that balance, protecting shareholders, but also encouraging investment. It's complicated, and it's something that courts and lawmakers and corporate boards are always trying to figure out.
This whole case seems like a perfect example of the bigger debates about corporate power, shareholder rights, and the role of the courts in the marketplace. It's not just a boring legal case. It's about how businesses work and who really holds the power.
I agree. And that's what makes deep dives like this so interesting. We're going beyond the surface, exploring the nuances, and thinking about the bigger implications of these legal decisions.
We've covered a lot, but there's still one thing we haven't really talked about. Remember that 2009 shareholder vote? The one that increased PCB's authorized shares from 100 million to 500 million.
Oh, yeah. That vote actually plays a big part in this whole story. It's a great example of how a decision made years ago can have unexpected consequences down the line.
Sounds like a story for part three of our deep dive. Don't miss it. Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into the Pacific Capital Bancorp case. We've gone through the legal arguments, looked at the court's reasoning, and thought about what it means for both boards and shareholders. But, like we said at the end of part two, there's one more piece of the puzzle to look at. That big 2009 shareholder vote.
Yeah, this vote really shows how a decision that seemed pretty routine at the time can have consequences years later. Back in 2009, PCB was having a rough time, right? Remember all those regulatory pressures from losses in the real estate market?
So they went to their shareholders and asked for permission to up the number of authorized shares. Seemed like a smart move, a way to bring in investors and strengthen their capital.
And the shareholders agreed. They voted to increase the authorized shares from like a small 100 million to a big 500 million. They had no idea this decision would come back in a big way.
This is where it gets confusing for me. Jump ahead to 2010, when PCB made that deal with Ford Financial. The agreement let Ford get some common stock right away, putting them on track to become a majority shareholder. But the big thing was that convertible preferred stock, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Once those preferred shares got converted to common stock, Ford's ownership would shoot way up. And to handle that increase, they'd need more shares, even more than the 500 million that was already authorized.
Ah, so that's where that 2009 vote comes back to bite those dissenting shareholders. They'd already okayed the bump to 500 million shares, so the path was clear for Ford to grab a controlling stake without needing another shareholder vote.
You got it. And the court really focused on this. They said the most important thing wasn't Ford's move to increase the number of authorized shares later, but that 2009 decision by the shareholders. That's what set the stage for Ford to take control.
Like a chain reaction, huh? One seemingly small vote started a whole series of events that led to a big power shift. Makes you wonder if the shareholders who voted for that initial increase knew what they were really doing.
It's a classic case of unintended consequences, really. Shows how important it is to really think about the long-term effects of decisions, even ones that seem routine. And it raises some questions about whether shareholders were paying attention and really understood what was going on. Did they know what could happen because of their vote?
It's something to think about, for sure. It shows that shareholders have to be proactive. They have to really dig into these deals, understand them, and think critically about what might happen.
Definitely. Shareholders have a right, you could even say, a responsibility, to hold boards accountable and protect their own interests. This case is a reminder that being complacent can have some pretty big consequences.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the biggest takeaway for our listeners? What should they be thinking about as they deal with the complexities of corporate law?
Well, I think the main lesson here is that every decision, every vote, every single part of a contract can have ripple effects that go way beyond the immediate situation. It's so important to look at these things carefully, ask the tough questions, and be aware of what could happen, both the things you want to happen and the things you don't.
It's about understanding how power works, the balance between getting investments and protecting shareholder rights, and how important it is for shareholders to be informed and involved in how corporations are run. It's easy to get lost in the legal details, but this case reminds us that these issues have real consequences for companies, investors, and the market as a whole.
Well put. And never underestimate what a seemingly simple shareholder vote can do. Sometimes those votes can set things in motion that completely change company.
This deep dive has taken us through all the twists and turns of a really interesting case. We've explored the details of corporate law and the bigger implications for companies, investors, and the entire market. We hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.